Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, November 11th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Honoring Service, Enduring Legacy. Purple Heart returned to Central Illinois veteran's family. Wounded in the shoulder and ordered to retire from combat, Private Delbert Tuttle refused to leave his fellow U.S. Marines as his unit invaded the Japanese-held island of Saipan during World War II. The son of a Central Illinois farmer stayed to run ammunition to frontline troops, then went back again, still under heavy fire. He was wounded a second time while directing tank fire against the enemy. Tuttle, then 24, showed such extraordinary grit during the bloody battle, one that proved critical to the Allied victory in the Pacific, that it earned him a Silver Star as well as a Purple Heart, which is awarded to those injured or killed in combat. On a recent fall day, Tuttle's 71-year-old daughter held her father's heart-shaped medal for the first time after Illinois Treasurer Michael Friedrich presented it to her during a poignant October 29th ceremony at the World War II Memorial in Decatur, her hometown. Friedrich's office had preserved the medal in a Springfield vault since October 2018, when a Pekin bank turned it over to the state from an abandoned safe deposit box. Now it was being returned to Tuttle's next of kin. Weeping tears of pride, Carolyn Peckham said her parents didn't share many details about the war, including the bravery her late father showed 80 years ago on Saipan. "I guess I'm just so emotional because I never knew any of this, and I'm just so proud of him," she told the Tribune. "I knew about the medals, but as far as the stories behind them, the acts of heroism, I had no clue." The safe deposit box was in the name of Peckham's brother, Vincent Tuttle, whose whereabouts are unknown. Peckham said she hasn't heard from him in several years, despite her efforts to locate him. She suspects the box belonged to their mother, Lorraine, who died in 2009. The Illinois Treasurer is the state's custodian of unclaimed property, which includes everything from lost bank accounts and insurance policies to stamps, coins, jewelry, baseball cards, and at least one antique sword. An estimated $2 billion in forgotten cash and stock has been returned to individuals, employers, and nonprofits during Friedrich's three terms, according to his office, including a dozen Purple Heart medals. The treasurer launched a special effort, Operation Purple Heart, in late 2021. "No matter how many years have passed," Friedrich told Peckham, time does nothing to diminish his bravery, and we still honor his service to our country. Tuttle was among millions of Americans whose young lives were interrupted by war, but he didn't wait for the draft to come calling. He enlisted in the Marines in October 1942 as the country approached its second year at war. The former farmhand was working for the Rock Island Arsenal in the Quad Cities, where he worked on parts for artillery vehicles. Three co-workers who provided references described him as trustworthy at all times and an honest and upright American, according to his military file. He left for basic training in San Diego shortly after enlistment. The Tuscola Review later published at least two letters he wrote to his parents, John and Florence Tuttle, who at the time lived in Pisotum, south of Champaign. "It sure does get hot here in the day and just as cold at night," he wrote in a letter published November 5, 1942, while he was still stateside. "My nose is sunburned and peeling off, and I sure do like it here. We have a good sergeant and captain, and I sure do eat a lot here. I bet I've gained 5 pounds already. We have everything to eat that you can think of." In another letter published January 13, 1944, while Tuttle was overseas, he told his parents about his travels and the bloodshed he had witnessed during a tough battle taking the Gilberts, a reference to a campaign success in the Pacific Theater. "Since leaving New Zealand," he wrote, "we stopped at New Hebrides Islands and hit the Gilbert Islands. I'm now on a beautiful little island called Tarau. We got through without a scratch." 5 months later, he would not be as lucky. On the second day of the invasion of Saipan, on June 16th, The Marine was wounded in his right shoulder and ordered to retreat, records show. But Tuttle would not leave his fellow Marines with Company F, 2nd Battalion, 6th Marines, 2nd Marine Division. Instead, he brought more ammunition to the front lines while still under enemy fire. Then he went back again. He then courageously, with disregard for his own safety, directed the fire of our tanks against the enemy until receiving a second wound, which forced him to be evacuated, according to a citation signed by Marine Lieutenant General H.M. Smith, one of America's top commanders in the Pacific during World War II. News of Tuttle's bravery reached his hometown, where Central Illinois newspapers reported on his combat injuries, including the second incident when shrapnel struck him in the legs. The battle proved a key victory that allowed the U.S. to launch B-29 bombers directly at Japan's home islands. Tuttle was promoted to corporal, and his military accolades followed. He was awarded the Purple Heart that October, and in February 1945, the Marines snapped a photo of him shaking Major General Thomas Watson's hand as Tuttle received the Silver Star. The medal was awarded for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action against enemy forces on Saipan. Peckham said her father's dedication to his country and fellow Marines is inspiring. The reality of what Dad went through, to know he was actually willing to serve his country, serve his fellow Marines, and stay after he's wounded, it shows you what kind of man he was. I imagine he had people die right in front of him. To go back a second time and not retreat, that really takes a truly honorable man. He could have turned and run, but he held his post. Delbert Tuttle came home at age 26 after being honorably discharged in November 1945. He had been away for 3 years. He moved in with his folks, now in Urbana, then made his way to Chicago. There he met and fell for Lorraine Fellows, who lived next door, according to their daughter. The young couple married on New Year's Eve in 1950 and raised their two children in Decatur, where Tuttle worked for A.W. Cash Company, running a turret lathe and other machines. He always wore khakis and his trademark wingtip shoes. "I was a daddy's girl when I was little," his daughter said. "Anywhere my dad went, I had to go." Dilbert and Lorraine Tuttle never divorced, but the couple began living apart when Peckham was about 8 or 9. She said her parents had a special love between them, but fought too much to live under the same roof. Still, Peckham said her father was a constant presence in his children's lives, especially when she began dating. He made her wait until she turned 18. "He could be fun, but I'll tell you, with me being the only girl, oh my Lord," she said. "He would always say, 'I want to know his name, his address, and everything else,' and he'd have to meet him. And I'd say, 'If you're not home when you're supposed to be, I will find you and pull you out of there by the hair on your head.' He was a tough cookie." In 1962, Tuttle survived another life-threatening event, a head-on collision near Tuscola. The crash was so bad it made the local news. "It did everything but kill him," Peckham said. "It took a year for him to walk all over again." She said her father struggled with PTSD, likely dating to his military service, and had a nervous breakdown after the accident. A decade later, on a Sunday afternoon in April 1972, his body was found in his car in the garage of a home he had recently rented in Forsyth. Tuttle had nailed boards across the inside of the locked door. He didn't leave a note behind. His death was ruled a suicide from carbon monoxide poisoning, according to the coroner's report. He was 52. Peckham said her father had been diagnosed with lung cancer. That, coupled with his marital separation and post-traumatic stress disorder, likely led to his decision to take his own life. Peckham, nearly 19 at the time, was working as a waitress at a local diner when she found out. "The minute I saw two Macon County sheriffs come up in there and ask for me, I knew he was gone," she told the Tribune. "Dad had been through so much with the war, the separation and the cancer, it was just too much. I guess he knew there was no way out. I wish I could have saved him. She said her younger brother Vincent, then about 16, identified their father's body. He later told her he knew it was their father before the sheet covering his face was pulled down because he had spotted his father's wingtip shoes. I remember my grandmother Tuttle told me, she said, "Honey, your dad went through a lot in the military." She said when he came home, really, he didn't come home the same. She said he left as my son, but he came back different. It really affected him. A few years ago, Peckham's cousin in Urbana surprised her with some of her father's old military photos and records that she didn't know existed, as well as a few spent shell casings from his military funeral honors. The cousin got them from her mother, who was Delbert Tuttle's only sibling. But the Purple Heart and Silver Star were missing. Peckham said she found out the state had the Purple Heart a while ago after a neighbor heard Tuttle's name while watching a TV news report about the treasurer's efforts to return the medals. Peckham said she quickly filed a claim, but the situation with her brother, whose name was on the bank safe deposit box, delayed recovery of the medal. In the meantime, the Tuttle name stayed on the treasurer's Operation Purple Heart website. The Tribune identified Peckham through family obituaries, and after multiple phone calls to wrong numbers, sent a handwritten letter over the summer that Peckham answered. The Tribune provided her with about 100 pages from her father's official military file. The military records came from the National Archives and Records Administration in St. Louis. Then, shortly before Veterans Day, Peckham had her father's Purple Heart back again. Her son Vincent, 47, also attended the private ceremony. Fredericks, who was joined by State Representative Sue Scherer, a Decatur Democrat, told Peckham her father was part of the greatest generation and was a hero to our country. "I've been waiting a long time for this," Peckham tearfully responded. "I will never forget this moment for the rest of my life. It's quite an honor." Later at her home, she told the Tribune, "I wish he could have been standing beside me to receive it. I know he was with me in spirit, but I miss his presence so much." She placed the Purple Heart in a jewelry box, then stored it in a locked glass curio cabinet in her dining room. Her mother's ashes sit atop the cabinet, and a framed photo of Jesus adorns the wall behind it. Peckham still is searching for her father's missing Silver Star, which was not in the bank deposit box. And she hopes the Marines will give her another American flag, as she said the one presented to her family at her father's 1972 funeral service was stolen in a burglary. Her dad is buried at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Springfield, alongside other Illinois military heroes. At the bottom of his tombstone, the initials SS-PH alert passersby to all Tuttle accomplished and sacrificed for his country. Also on the front page, starting up small business a challenge. Financial side tough on veterans, but help is available. From New York. Many veterans who've started small businesses tell a similar story. Their military service prepared them mentally for the task, but they were at a disadvantage when it came to the financial part. Vetrapreneurs, veterans that start small businesses or startups, own nearly 2 million small businesses that employ 5.5 million people in the U.S., according to the Small Business Administration. They take in about $1.3 trillion in revenue annually, and their numbers have shrunk, however, as the veteran population has aged. In a 2023 report, the SBA found veteran ownership declined about 11% of businesses in 2014 to 8.1% in 2020. Veterans enter the business world prepared with skills they gained in the field, like leadership and problem solving. But they haven't had a chance to build up credit or savings that civilians have had more time to do. That can cause problems because banks use that information to approve loans. Not to mention the toll it takes to transition from the military life to civilian life. According to data from business coaching nonprofit SCORE, about a third of veteran businesses have limited access to capital or lack of financing. That compares to a quarter of non-veteran-owned firms. SCORE CEO Bridget Weston says the good news is that veterans have plenty of places to turn to for help. Those include nonprofit organizations aimed at getting them on their feet and building up financial literacy, veteran-only loans and grants, and contracts earmarked for veteran-owned and disabled veteran-owned small businesses. The place that many start is the Small Business Administration, which offers a program to get certified as a veteran-owned or disabled veteran-owned small business, which can make it easier to get certain loans and federal contracts. That's the route Jackson Dalton decided to take when he started Black Box Safety, a maker of personal protective equipment in 2017. Dalton enlisted in the U.S. Marines in 2000 and was selected for the prestigious Marine Corps Special Operations. But a badly broken leg suffered during training eventually forced him to medically retire after 2 years of active duty. Although the transition back to civilian life was difficult, Dalton went on to get a master's degree in public health and spent 10 years working in the health and safety industry. When he ventured out on his own, he decided to focus on federal contracts and got certified by the SBA. He thought prisons would be a good place to start since 3% of their contracts go to disabled veteran businesses. His first contract was selling gloves to a prison in Minnesota. Today, he serves major clients like the Department of Veteran Affairs and the state of California. And from Rio Grande City, Texas, Trump flips counties along Texas border. The Jorge Bazaz family has lived on the U.S.-Mexico border for generations and voted for Democrats as long as he can remember. He broke the family tradition this year and voted for Trump because he doesn't trust the Democratic Party's economic policies. "I think they forgot about the middle class," said Bazant, who works for the utility company in Rio Grande City, seat of the most Hispanic county in the nation. "People are suffering right now. Everything's very expensive." The South Texas region, stretching from San Antonio to the Rio Grande Valley, has long been a Democratic stronghold. A slide toward Trump in 2020 rattled Democrats in the predominantly Hispanic area, where for decades Republicans seldom bothered to field candidates in local races. However, few Democrats expected the dramatic realignment that happened Tuesday when Trump flipped several counties along the border, including Hidalgo and Cameron, the two most populous counties in the Rio Grande Valley. In Starr County, where Bazan lives, voters backed a Republican presidential candidate for the first time in a century. The predominantly Hispanic and working-class rural county, with a median household income of $36,000, that's one of the lowest in the nation, gave Trump a 16 percentage point victory margin over Vice President Harris. Roughly 2 million residents live at Texas's southernmost point, among vast tracts of farmland and many state and federal agents patrolling the border. Trump's victories in the Rio Grande Valley starkly showed how working-class voters nationwide are shifting toward Republicans. That includes voters on the Texas border, where many Democrats long argued that Trump's promised crackdowns on immigration would turn off voters. Rockefeller Christmas tree arrives in New York City. From New York, the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree arrived in New York City on Saturday, signaling the start of the holiday season in the Big Apple. The 74-foot Norway spruce was driven into Manhattan's Center Plaza to be hoisted in place by a crane. It was met in New York City by smiling crowds who held cell phones aloft from behind barriers as crews attached cables to the giant tree, pounded a stake into its base, and guided it into place. The lighting ceremony is scheduled for December 4th. It will take 5 miles of light strands with more than 50,000 multicolored LED bulbs to wrap the tree, whose diameter measures 43 feet. A Swarovski star crown sparkling with 3 million crystals will top it. When it finally comes down in January, the tree will be milled into lumber for Habitat for Humanity. The towering conifer, donated by the Albert family in West Stockbridge, Massachusetts, was cut down Thursday morning and loaded onto a flatbed truck for the 140-mile trip. It is the first Rockefeller Center Christmas tree to come from Massachusetts since 1959. The crowds were big today. They were one of the biggest crowds I've ever seen that come to a tree raising, said Eric Paws, head gardener at Rockefeller Center, who wore a candy cane-striped hard hat. Once in its new home, the adjustments began to get it ready for the elaborate tree trimming to come. We stood it up, and now we're going to lower some of the branches down by hand because they're so heavy and so big that we have to lower them down by hand. Paws, responsible for finding the tree and helping transport it, said he first spotted this green giant back in 2020. I saw the beautiful Norway spruce as I drove down the road, and it was right in front of me, he was quoted by Rockefeller Center's newsletter as saying. I knocked on the door and met Earl Albert. I asked if he would someday consider donating the tree to Rockefeller Center. His answer was immediately yes. Sean Albert, Earl's daughter-in-law, recalled that Paws stopped by 2 days after Earl Albert's wife, Leslie, died. She said her father-in-law immediately agreed to donate the tree, taking it as a sign from Leslie, who loved Christmas. The family decorated the tree each year with Christmas lights. The family couldn't have a funeral for Leslie Albert because of the COVID-19 pandemic, so Thursday's event, which included carolers sending off the tree, was a way to remember her. She was such a huge part of the community, Sean Albert said in a video of the event provided by Rockefeller Center. To me, this is like her gathering that we finally get to have, and we finally get to honor her. And from the gardening page, perfect for pollinators, Big Hydrangea Pinky Winky Prime opens new landscape options. Pinky Winky has gone prime. One of my all-time favorite hydrangea varieties, Pinky Winky, is now being offered as prime. This means you can now choose Pinky Winky or Pinky Winky Prime hydrangea for your landscape or pollinator habitat, as I will explain. Your first question is what the difference is, and that would be size. It is larger, reaching 6 to 9 feet tall, and as wide. And as Proven Winner states, the blooms are massive. When August rolls around and butterfly season is peaking, Pinky Winky and Pinky Winky Prime stand ready to supply the nectar. After watching panicle hydrangeas for years, I can tell you that while they are all beautiful, they are not all the same when it comes to bees and butterflies. Pinky Winky and now Pinky Winky Prime are at the top. Many will find this odd, so let me explain. First, know that I am not talking about larval host plants. I'm not talking milkweeds, passion flowers, dill, tulip trees, or pipe vines. I'm talking about nectar plants. You're probably thinking you've been growing hydrangeas for years and never seen a pollinator. I will be quick to say that's okay. We need shrubs with beautiful flowers in the landscape. Pinky Winky and Pinky Winky Prime are good examples. A close examination will show they have large, sterile flowers that give us the proverbial show and go in the landscape, the wow factor, so to speak. Among those sterile flowers are tiny, fertile flowers. Now, a lot of literature will call the sterile ones flowers and the perfect flower florets. But some in the industry want to call this lace cap, a term we have given more so to hydrangea and hydrangea varieties. I don't like that. The flower structure doesn't look like a cap. I'm simply a horticulturist with an opinion. So back to Pinky Winky and Pinky Winky Prime. I have already referred to the large sterile flowers as the wow factor in the landscape. A giant eastern tiger swallowtail on these tiny fertile flowers is certainly a wow factor of a different sort. I've mentioned eastern tiger swallowtails, but I have photos of gulf and red-banded hairstreaks, honeybees, large flies that look like bees, and other flying creatures like the black-winged Donna moth. In other words, a large pinky winky hydrangea can be a pollinator smorgasbord come July and August in the south. Of course, these are recommended for zones 3A to 8B, so a large area of the country can enjoy them. These hydrangeas open the door for creative planting partnerships in the habitat garden. Pollinator magnets like meteor shower verbena, tufla pink gramina, and luscious lantanas all make great companions with the new pinky weeky prime. By all means, don't forget proven winners great vidalias. Consider also songbird-loving plant partners like Pearl Glam Beautyberry to add to your habitat. I have Limelight Prime, a little lime punch, and pufferfish for show, and Go for the Camera always comes out for the visitors to my varieties with both sterile and fertile florets. If you live in a region of the country where panicle hydrangeas color up, then you will absolutely love Pinky Winky Prime. And some hints from Heloise. Flooring expert has a few suggestions. Dear Heloise, I've put down flooring of all kinds for over 25 years, and I have a few suggestions for readers. Got squeaky floors? Sprinkle baby or talcum powder along the boards that are squeaking, and this should silence them. If this does not silence the noise, try a liquid furniture wax that is squeezed through a nozzle along the edges, and wipe away any excess. If you decide to put down new flooring, the tongue and groove kind uses boards that are about 6 inches or less. Shorter boards will go down easier, and if any of the boards should happen to buckle, the shorter boards are easier to remove and replace. And finally, wood rot is sometimes a problem where there is moisture and in very humid climates. Take a screwdriver and tap areas where you suspect rot. The board will usually crumble or seem to be spongy if there is fungus at work. You can rub those areas with a wire brush, then rub table salt into the area. However, it's better to just tear out the problem boards and replace them. As for clothing care, here are some hints on some how to care for clothing. If you have a pair of dark jeans or dark t-shirts, it's always best to turn them inside out and wash them in cold water with minimal soap. This is especially important if you hang your clothes outside to dry. To get rid of mothball odors, hang clothes outside for about an hour, then place them in the dryer for 10 to 15 minutes to fluff the fibers. Drying them is an added measure to get rid of the mothball smell. Use a handheld steamer to get wrinkles out of wool. Do not saturate an area with the steam. And finally, never store your clothing in a plastic or nylon bag. Garments need to breathe, and a polyethylene bag emits a gas that can alter the color of your clothing. Cloth or even paper is a better choice for clothing storage. And always fold your sweaters. And finally, a slightly moistened paper towel tucked into a bag of salad greens helps keep them fresh. This works well for other veggies as well. When I have liquid to discard that may have some fat in it, such as broth, I first let the liquid cool so that the fat congeals, and then I lay a paper towel across the sink drain to drain the fat. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, November 11th. Please stay tuned.